May it please the court, Kate Aronson representing appellant Joseph Tay. Good morning. The statute in effect at the time of Michelle Smith's death made a defendant criminally responsible for murder first degree only if the reckless killing occurred while the person was in the lawful performance of duties as a firefighter. In other words, it was not just the person's status as a firefighter, but whether that person was performing duties as a firefighter at the time of the person's death. There was no dispute in this case that the conduct was reckless. There was no dispute that Michelle Smith was trained as a firefighter. There also was no dispute that she was not acting as a firefighter at the time, but rather was dispatched in an ambulance to assist a motorcyclist who was injured and to render emergency medical assistance. This court reviews a motion for a denial of a judgment of acquittal de novo, and the standard is whether any rational trier of fact, viewing the evidence in the light most favorable to the state, could find a defendant guilty beyond a reasonable doubt of causing the death of a firefighter in the lawful performance of duties as a firefighter.
The statute uses the unmodified word duties.
Correct.
And the undisputed record shows that one of the duties of, you know, the firefighter group in question, that is, of which the victim was a member, was to do what we would, in by way of shorthand, call it EMS-type service. So why wasn't she performing her duty as a firefighter in those circumstances?
Two reasons. One is, unlike the Colorado statute, our statute does not say any duty.
And it says duties. That could comprehend all duties.
It could, but not all EMS or EMR emergency medical responders are trained as firefighters, and the converse is not true as well.
Well, at least in this universe, all firefighters were trained as EMS, weren't they?
Not all have that particular certification.
But if they, whether they were certified or not, that was part of their duties, that they were told to do that. Is that not the case?
That's correct, but that then only focuses on the individual's status and not what that individual is doing at that particular moment. Because then this, I mean, it would protect a member of a fire company.
That's putting the rabbit in the hat. You know, it's one thing to say firefighter, even though the victim wasn't fighting fires. It's another to talk about duties when those duties encompass some activity other than directly fighting a fire. So I guess when I'm doesn't the issue boil down to whether or not the term duties, not firefighter, but duties, must be narrowly read as a matter of law?
It must be narrowly read as a matter of law at the date and time of the incident, yes.
Well, even at the date and time of the incident of the death, she was performing duties as a firefighter. That is, she was performing duties that she was required to do as a firefighter. So unless we, these are my words, not yours, unless we can shoehorn into the word duties the fighting fires and restricting it to that, there can't be any aggravating circumstance. That's the way we would have to read the statute.
Correct.
Along the same lines, I'm having a little bit of trouble with what I take to be your position, that a person who is performing the duties of a firefighter has only one thing they can be doing, and that is putting out flames or, you know, putting out a fire, controlling a fire. Is that basically what you're saying?
The dictionary definitions are consistent for suppressing or fighting fires. So to the extent that this court, when a word is not defined in the statute, refers commonly to dictionaries, that is the dictionary definition. However, there was testimony in this case that firefighters also go to rescue boaters, for example. If you are acting as a firefighter, dressed in a uniform, on a fire truck, and your duty as a firefighter in that capacity on that particular day is to go rescue a boater, potentially, then no, my position is not, based on this record, that solely suppressing fires is what firefighters do.
But you seem to consider it significant whether you're dressed in a firefighter uniform or not, and whether you got to the scene of the incident on a fire truck or in some other emergency vehicle. Why should those things be significant when, at least in the facts of this case, both the fire truck and the emergency vehicle came from the fire station and were staffed by members of the fire department?
Because the legislature chose not to include paramedics, EMTs, or ambulance attendants as in that statute, in the murder first degree statute.
Well, you're saying that the legislature chose not to include, and you're making that assumption based upon the fact that they are not enumerated, right?
Correct, and I think that's evidenced in two ways. One is multiple statutes in the same subchapter of the code specifically delineate paramedics, EMTs, ambulance attendants. The assault first degree statute, which actually was amended 6 months before this incident, added firefighters, paramedics, and EMTs as separate subclasses. And secondly, the legislature implicitly acknowledged that paramedics and EMTs were not protected when they amended this statute and added those classes of persons and then called it the Michelle Smith Law.
Is it significant at all that the call came into the fire station? You know, let's suppose someone calls 911 and they describe what their need is, and it sounds more like EMT than putting out a fire. And you could either call the EMTs or you could call the local fire station, and you choose to call the fire station. Would that be a significant fact?
I don't believe so, no.
So, and I say that in the context that if you're at the fire station waiting for an assignment and your assignment turns out to be a rescue, why isn't that, you know, part of what you're doing as a firefighter?
If your position at the particular time and on that particular date is as a firefighter, and that is your duty then to go do a rescue, then yes, that fits within. But if, in the alternative, you're designated with different duties and different responsibilities, if Michelle Smith had arrived at this scene with this downed motorcyclist on an ambulance wearing a pair of scissors on her belt and a fire broke out, she would have had no method by which to fight that fire. That was not her role on that particular day. She had no equipment.
But isn't it, maybe my understanding is incorrect, but isn't it the case that fire trucks with firefighters on them routinely work with emergency technicians responding to a call that is strictly a medical problem because the firefighters are frequently needed to help get the victim from where they are onto the ambulance and for other kinds of for ladders to get up places and so forth, but that they're two parts of the same operation, and firefighters and fire trucks routinely go to places other than fires.
Correct. And there was testimony in this case that routinely not only are EMS services dispatched, but also firefighter. But the firefighter responds with a completely different role to a motor vehicle accident. One would either be to help extricate someone because they have different equipment, and different responsibilities at that scene as opposed to rendering emergency medical assistance such as the paramedic would do.
Well, I guess you can see from our questions what we're trying to sort out is the historic role of a firefighter only fighting fires. And if the historic role had been preserved, the dictionary definition would probably make sense. But if what we see is an evolution in the range of duties that are now performed by people who are firefighters, why don't we take that expanded range of duties into consideration? Why do we simply go back to the historic dictionary definition of fighting a fire?
I think that this court can acknowledge the expanded role of the firefighter. However, the fact that the legislature didn't include the paramedic and the EMT restricts this court based on fulfilling the intent of the legislature at the time of the statute.
Just if I might follow up on Justice Holland's question, approaching it a slightly different way. You know, one of the concerns I have is how this court goes about analyzing this case. The trial court found that it not that the statute is ambiguous. Is that right?
Yes.
Which is why I considered extrinsic evidence.
Right.
Do you contest that much of the analysis? Do you agree that it's ambiguous?
If the court takes the historic role of firefighters.
No. Do you agree it's ambiguous? Because if you don't, then there's only one way the statute can be read, and that's your position. If it is ambiguous, then implicitly what the court was finding is that your reading of the statute was one reasonable interpretation, and the other, the state's reading, was also a reasonable interpretation, and the court had to decide. Where are we in that analysis, as far as your side is concerned?
With picking up on Justice Berger's analysis of solely suppressing fires as the definition, then the answer is the statute is ambiguous.
It's ambiguous?
Yes.
Okay. So we could go either way, and the question is, how do we go about deciding which way to go? Would you agree that the purpose of the statute is a relevant factor? That is what the statute is, you know, seeking to achieve.
Yes.
And determining how it should be interpreted.
Yes.
What then is your side's view as to the purpose of the statute, which has the effect of stepping up what would otherwise be manslaughter to murder?
The purpose of the statute is to protect a class of persons who are engaging in an inherently higher risk type of activity. And the firefighter is engaging in far different activities than an individual who is driving an ambulance to a scene and assessing a situation when then the paramedic is there with a different role with different skills.
In other words, the societal interest in protecting someone who is engaged in actual firefighting is greater than it would be if that same person were simply acting as an EMS, in an EMS capacity, as the statute was then drafted and taking into account, the later amendments.
When initially drafted, the legislature recognized and protected that inherently riskier activity of firefighters. The subsequent amendment has now incorporated other classes of persons within it and recognizing the risk to those persons.
It either did that or it clarified what was implicit but not explicit all along.
I would go with the former. I would reserve the balance of my time.
Thank you.
May it please the court, Sean Lugg, on behalf of the City of Delaware. I would begin by noting the facts of this case, which are quite telling and are instructive as to the court's analysis, which would begin with Section 201 of Title 11. Michelle Smith, a firefighter, was working at a firehouse covering duties for another fire company on December 20th, 2008.
I think, know what the facts are. They're undisputed. Can you address the statutory interpretation problem?
Yes, Your Honor. It is the state's position that we are largely in agreement on all but the separation of the definition of firefighter and the secondary analysis, that being the analysis of the duty. It appears that the defendant's position or appellant's position now is that the duties are wholly intertwined with the definition of firefighter and are exclusively related to the extinguishing of fires. It appears through argument today that that's expanded to some degree to include the wearing of a uniform or with the potential of a fire.
Well, just in analytical terms, I mean, we're construing a statute here.
Correct.
Ms. Aronson concedes that the statute is ambiguous. Is that also the state's position?
No, I don't think the statute is ambiguous, and I think what...
You're contending, then, that there's only one reasonable reading, and it's your side's reading.
That's correct. And what...
And do you have a backup position, or is that it?
Well, I think the reasonable reading, Your Honor, is that, one, a firefighter is, in fact, one who fights fires. That dictionary definition is consistent. But that position excludes the second part of the statute, and that is the duties of a firefighter.
And what's the unambiguous definition of duties of a firefighter? Can you list them?
Yes, Your Honor.
How would one determine them? I think what's confusing to the court is if you expand what a firefighter does beyond fighting fires, and the statute uses the word duties. Either duties is unambiguous and everybody knows what a firefighter's duties are, or duties is an unambiguous term, and you take extrinsic evidence, as we did in this case, to present the expanded role of a firefighter. As I understood your response to Justice Jacobs, nobody needs any extrinsic evidence because everybody knows what a firefighter's duties are. And I can tell you, I, for one, wouldn't be able to list what a firefighter's duties are. I would need some help with extrinsic evidence.
Well, I appreciate that, and I apologize if that was the way my argument was presented. To respond to Your Honor's question, the duties of a firefighter were those enumerated by the trial court, which would include the very conduct that Michelle Smith engaged in.
But the trial court got to that by finding that the statute was ambiguous. Is that correct?
As to the duty portion, I believe there was some ambiguity.
So do we all agree on that?
I believe we do.
Okay.
My response was directed towards the firefighter provision. The defining the duty, which really it's the state's position is the crux of this case, is where this court's decision in the Williams case is very instructive. And that in that case, assessing the community caretaker doctrine, this court commented on law enforcement officers as being jacks of all trades and looking at the function of law enforcement in the state of Delaware and present-day society. That analysis, the state submits, is incredibly helpful in assessing the statute in this case.
Well, let's back up for a moment. You now concede that the statutory term duties is ambiguous. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor.
That means that Ms. Aronson's reading of the statute is reasonable, as is the state's, and therefore the court must choose between one or the other.
Well, I would not say
is that right.
No, I do not believe it would be reasonable because
that's not right. That if you have two reasonable interpretations, the court doesn't have to choose one.
If there are two reasonable interpretations, the court would need to choose between them.
All right. Well, that's where we are, isn't it?
To some extent, however,
Either you concede that the term duties is ambiguous or you don't. Where are you?
The term does require, it is ambiguous in the sense that it does require the court to look at evidence of the conduct of the individual in defining the duty.
Okay.
With respect to the court's looking at two different concepts. I don't believe the defendant has offered a position with respect to defining duty. The argument that's been proffered by the defense has been solely focused on firefighter and the obligation and limitations of the duty to solely fight fires.
Well, I think the other side would disagree with that. I would think she would argue that even though the word duties standing alone may be broad, it has to be read together with the term firefighter, and there must be taken into account the fact that there was no mention of EMS service deliverers in that statute, and indeed the statute was later amended to include them, all of which would point to a narrow reading of the term duties. And I suppose the further argument would be that one has to take into account what the statute was really intending to accomplish, and it would be argued that what the statute was intending to accomplish was to protect people who were in the process of fighting fires. So that was the societal interest, and not necessarily some non-firefighting duty that later evolved.
Well, I think looking at the history of the statute, first, referencing the most recent amendments and that's impact on this particular case, it does not provide, and frankly was not extant at the time of this case, and really can't provide as much guidance with respect to the legislative intent. However, I would note that if that is a factor the court is to consider, that in defining this as the Michelle Smith Act, the legislature explicitly stated that it was finding Michelle Smith to be a firefighter. The act, it appears, this being the 2009 legislation, was designed and crafted to reflect the fact that additional people beyond firefighters, beyond Michelle Smith firefighters, should be covered. But looking at the history...
In other words, by adding, for example, EMS, the legislature was trying to include EMS personnel who were not firefighters.
That's correct. And that's,
but if a firefighter happens to be an EMS person, and that and the duties of an EMS person were included within the duties of firefighters as a factual matter, that would suffice to elevate any homicide to murder, correct?
That's correct, and I believe the comments that they offered in the synopsis indicate that desire. The statute itself...
In the synopsis does it state that?
It defines Michelle Smith as a firefighter. It comments on that in defining this and calling this the Michelle Smith Act. And by virtue of that and recognition of her duties and responsibilities, I believe that that was implicit in their comments. The statute itself, looking at the history as the court has asked, was enacted in 1974. In 1974, the statute referred to the term fireman. That was subsequently amended in the mid-90s, 95, to adjust the term to firefighter. I think that that is telling. The other part of this, too, is, as the court has inquired as to what
and
the expectations...
And what does it tell us?
Well, the expectations of our society with respect to what a fireman, when the law was first enacted, and then general neutralized to a firefighter in 1995. In the 70s, we did not have these specialized groups that we've now parsed out through subsequent legislative enactments. For example, the Newcastle County Paramedic Unit didn't exist until 1976, and that was the first such entity in the state. So in the 70s, when the statute was initially enacted, firefighters and firemen were, in fact, doing all of the things that Michelle Smith was doing, and, in fact, more. That expectation, societal expectation for that conduct, has continued through time. Michelle Smith was trained to do both, and Michelle Smith and her colleagues were doing both on December 20th, 2008.
So, as I understand your argument, if we have 10 firefighters in a fire station and a call comes in, and whoever is in charge of the 10 firefighters would say, you five people get on the fire truck, you five people man the ambulance, and they all depart, and they're all firefighters. And in my hypothetical, obviously there was a fire either involved or a potential fire, or you wouldn't take the fire truck. Now, if that's right so far, what you are arguing is to the extent the people on the ambulance were firefighters when they left with the fire truck, and the fact that there was no fire and no fire truck ever left, and you simply sent out five firefighters with the ambulance, doesn't detract from the fact that they're operating as firefighters, because that's part of the firefighter's duty.
That is precisely the position of the state. And that is what occurred in this particular case. And the comment on the different roles, they were selected. Each of those individuals could have done the various functions. It happened that Ms. Smith, on December 20th, was dispatched on the ambulance. That was her assignment for the night.
But she could have just as easily been sent on the fire truck.
That's absolutely correct. And looking to the societal expectations, when that call came through, when that call was reflected on the board, it's clear that there was an expectation that those firefighting members were expected to respond to that location, and they did. And that is the definition of the duties of the firefighter. They were the first line of defense or offense in this case to protect the scene and protect society and assist Edward Reese. The paramedics, the EMTs, would follow from that to provide assistance once the scene was developed and understood. And to borrow from Your Honor's comments and hypothetical, the firefighting apparatus did follow. It was there. And it was a tandem effort, as testimony was elicited. This was a standard practice for the tandem effort of a truck, firefighting truck, and firefighters on an ambulance to respond jointly, largely to protect the scene. And unfortunately, in this case, that was not, it did not happen based on timing.
I may have misunderstood your argument, but I thought what you were telling us, dropping back to what you were saying before responding to Justice Hong's question, was that the legislature, when enacting this statute, called it the Michelle Smith Act, and in effect determined legislatively that she was a firefighter. Is that documented anywhere in your brief?
It is not, Your Honor. And for the reason that it was the state's position and remains that this court is required to focus on the law as it was at the time and the facts that were existent and the legislative enactments that were existing at the time of this case.
Well, doesn't it seem that the change in the law was really to acknowledge there are paramedics that have nothing to do with fighting fires at all, and that those paramedics should be covered by the statute just as firefighters had been in the past?
That's absolutely true. And I think the distinction there is we use terms such as paramedics and EMTs, but in a more general sense, there is basic life service, basic life support, and advanced life support. And the paramedics and the individuals that were added through the Michelle Smith Act were in the latter category. The advanced life support, the folks that arrive secondarily to take over and provide more advanced assistance. Firefighters provide basic life support in addition to their firefighting functions. That is what the facts of this case are about and what assists the court in defining Michelle Smith as a firefighter under the statute. If there are no other questions, the state appreciates the ability to address this issue.
Thank you.
Picking up on Justice Jacobs' remark, if there are two reasonable interpretations, then this court uses extrinsic aids in interpretation. And a reasonable interpretation is that the intent at the time that the statute was passed was not to include paramedics or fire or EMTs or ambulance attendants.
Well, help me apply that argument to the facts where there was a building on fire, and the building's clearly on fire, and we have the same situation where the firehouse is called, a fire truck leaves with some people on it who were there as firefighters, and the ambulance leaves with people who were there also as firefighters. They're just assigned to the ambulance. In that situation, if the people on the ambulance were injured, as in this case, would they have been firefighters or not, because they weren't in their uniform with a hose putting out the fire?
Would the individuals on the fire truck?
No, would the individuals in the ambulance have been covered by the statute as it existed before the amendment?
No, because their conduct and the risk of inherent in the conduct is different as between entering a building on fire to extinguish that fire versus treating medically individuals who are brought outside of that burning building and assisting medical care. Nothing further unless the court has other questions.
Thank you both very much. The court will take the matter under advisement and will take a brief recess.